I'm assuming you all stayed over. Or at hotels nearby, since it's absolutely impossible, of course, that you could get here on any street. We know that. We've been told for weeks. And in fact, Ralph Resnick, our ritual director, said to me this morning that actually this should be called Shabbat Geden, because what Los Angeles is asking is that everybody observe Shabbat and not get in their cars. So Ralph, I think for next year we have a good, since it's supposed to happen again next summer, we have our sermons ready. And as a result, of course, we only have the very best, because we don't have a bar mitzvah here, and it's the weekend when people stayed off the roads, we have the best and brightest of our congregants on this Shabbat. You are the cream of the crop. So I didn't want to give you some ordinary sermon that I just fished out of the files. Not that I would do that on any Shabbat, but certainly not on this Shabbat. I thought instead I would teach some Torah and talk about the way in which our tradition looks differently at various events in the Torah, in particular, the dominating event of this Shabbat, of this Torah reading, which is the act of Pinchas. If you don't remember, what Pinchas does is he sees an Israelite who is having sex with a Midianite woman, Zimri and Cozbi, and he kills them. And the question, of course, is this zealotry? Because that's how it's defined in the Torah. That is, he's kin'ah, he's a zealot. Is this zealotry good or bad? What is it to be a zealot? Is that a positive feature or a negative feature? In some ways, the Torah seems to suggest that it's clearly positive. Do you hear feedback or just me? Should I move to that? I have echo. What, do you want to hear this once or twice? So, all right, I'll move over here. Better? No. What are you, Jews? Half yes, half no. You, Howard Lesner, you are our executive director. Which microphone should I use? Stay on that one. Carlos is adjusting. Okay, I'll stay on this one. Carlos will adjust that one. Extremely negative. This? The act of killing. Got it. I thought the microphone. So this is what's so interesting about the tradition is, first of all, Rambam, by the way, who clearly does not like the idea in some ways that Pinchas did this, because Rambam is by nature himself, I hear feedback on this too, Rambam by nature is conservative. Is by his nature conservative. Rambam says only at the moment when the two are coupling, I'm trying to be delicate here, could this have been permitted, but the moment the act would be over, it would be murder like any other murder. So in other words, what Rambam is advocating is an extreme form of coitus interruptus. But anything else, I shouldn't have actually said that on tape, but anything else is not permitted. But what you find as you go through the tradition is it not only depends on the commentator. Some commentators point out, for example, that in Pinchas' name, the Yud is made smaller in verse 11 at the beginning of our Torah reading, and they say that's because the Yud, which stands for God, God is diminished by any act of violence, even if it's legitimate. But others say that Pinchas, in fact, saved the Israelites because God would have punished them much more had the Midianites and the Israelites, in fact, come together in some kind of alliance that this individual alliance sort of presaged. That is, had this act gone unpunished, the Israelite men would have thought, well, there's a free-for-all. So Hirsch, in the 19th century in Germany, praises Pinchas's zealotry. But in the Middle Ages, there were a lot of rabbis who condemned it. And as I say, this has not only to do with the individual rabbi's approach, it has to do also with the time. If you live in a time when you have no political power, then you don't want to say out loud, killing non-Jews can be good. Because after all, that's what he did. He killed a Jew and a non-Jew. You don't want to say the idea that Jews would intermingle with other nations is an idea that would persuade someone to commit murder. Even though the Midianites were in their own category, still in the Middle Ages, this was a dangerous declaration to make. And so when you interpret Torah, you don't only interpret it according to the Torah itself and according to your own inclinations, you do it according to the society in which you find yourself. When I was in England, I had a conversation with Chaim Weiner, who travels around Europe, and he conducts tours of Jews to different places so that they can see the realia, the actual situation where the Jewish tradition takes place, where it gets shaped. And he points out, for example, in one of his tours of Spain, that there's a discussion among the rabbis, should the courtyard count as the synagogue? When someone's in the courtyard, is it the same as being in the synagogue, or do you have to actually be in the synagogue? Now, why would anyone ask that question? And he shows that in many of the synagogues in Spain, there are these beautiful, leafy, outdoor courtyards, and people didn't want to come in. So the question was, can we count, since we need to make a minyan, all those people who are sitting out there in the courtyard, or do we have to persuade them all to come into the synagogue? Now, you would never know that that was the question unless you actually saw the condition. And the same thing is true here. In order to know how a commentator approaches the Torah, you not only need to know that commentator's approach, you need to know something about where that person lived and what they faced. Not only that, but ideologically you see differences. This morning, I compared the Eitz Chaim, our Chumash, which we use in our synagogue, which is clearly anti-zealotry. It says, yes, some of the commentators like zealotry, but really, here are all the ones that don't. And then, for a moment, I went upstairs to my office and I looked at the stone Chumash, which is the quite traditional Orthodox Chumash, and they said, zealotry's great. By this act of zealotry, in fact, Pinchas saved all the Israelites that God would have punished had he not committed this act. And you want to say to yourself, are they reading the same Torah? But that's part of the point, is that the Torah is rich enough and deep enough to support many different approaches. If it were not, you wouldn't have such a wide, various, and interesting Jewish people. But you do. And then you have some who try to reconcile both, like Rav Amital, who recently passed away, a noted and wonderful rabbi in Israel, said, zealotry is good internally. You should always feel about God like a zealot. But that doesn't mean you should always act like a zealot. And what you feel and what you do sometimes have to be separate from one another, because after all, there are realities in the world that you have to take in and appreciate and react to. So in this simple story, with profound implications, there are many, many questions that have no solution. You cannot say zealotry is good or zealotry is bad, because it's always ringed round with a thousand circumstances. Pinchas, as a result of this act, gets the priesthood. So on the one hand, you have commentators who say, aha, you see, zealotry is good, he gets the priesthood. But on the other hand, you have commentators who say, you see, God thought he couldn't control this guy, he better make him a priest so that he will be subject to all the rules of the priesthood and he won't get out of line again. It all depends. Sometimes zealotry is good, sometimes it's destructive. In certain societies, it could be permitted. In other societies, it cannot. As we look through the Torah, this division happens again and again and again. It happens, for example, with capital punishment. The Torah clearly permits capital punishment. Pinchas is a good example. Doesn't even have a court, doesn't even have a witness. He just goes in and kills them. But if you follow the thread through the Talmud, you find that not only are there arguments for capital punishment, but there are powerful arguments against it. There are limitations to it. There's the comment that you have to have two eyewitnesses to the act. That if you see someone following someone else behind a pillar with a knife, and then you see that person emerge from behind the pillar with a bloody knife, and the other person is dead behind the pillar, you cannot condemn them to death because there weren't two witnesses. And so, again and again and again, the tradition both weaves and unweaves, almost like Penelope with all the suitors before Ulysses came home. Remember, at night she weaved, because when she was done with her weaving, then she promised to marry one of them. So during the day she weaved, and then at night she would unravel everything that she had woven during the day. And you can do the same with the Torah, depending on what religious impulse needs to be fed at the moment. Shivim panim l'Torah. There are 70 faces to the Torah, the sages tell us, and I think they were underestimating. So when you take Pinchas, you can see it both ways. You can remind yourself of that wonderful phrase about Hillel and Shammai, that zeh vazeh, this and that, divrei Elohim chayim. They're both the words of the living God. There have been moments in Jewish history when zealotry was essential. To take an easy one, Ben Yehuda was practically the only man in the world, maybe the only man in the world, who spoke Hebrew to his children at a time when nobody in the world spoke Hebrew to their children. Because he believed one day it would matter, and he went around inventing words so that he could speak them to his children when such a thing was unknown. He was a zealot. He was a little crazy, if you think about what he was doing, speaking a language that no one else spoke. And now there's a nation that speaks Hebrew. On the other hand, in order to bring that nation into existence, it required not only zealots, but thousands and thousands of compromises and compromisers. So was Pinchas right, or was he wrong? Depends. It depends. Where you find yourself, when you find yourself, your personal inclination, and also the social need. The social need matters. Remember what Hillel said in a famous moment in the Talmud when they asked him if something was permitted, and he said, "Puch chazi, go out and see what the people are doing." In other words, he based his legal decision on the practices of Israel. So this isn't something that any rabbi can dictate or any scholar can pronounce on. The degree to which we need to be zealous, the degree to which we need to compromise, then and now, is an organic decision of the people Israel. And the Torah is the beginning, not the end, of the conversation. Shabbat Shalom.